Welcome to the Progressive Property Podcast, helping you invest in property for freedom, choice, and profit. You'll learn new, innovative, and multiple streams of property income, whether you want to start, scale, or systemize, and even if you don't have deposits.
Welcome back. In today's video, we're going to be talking all things budget. So Jeremy Hunt has just done his budget, probably his final one, and we're going to be doing a breakdown of the good, the bad, and the ugly. I'm joined in the studio by Richard Stone. Richard has got years of experience in property, large commercial conversions, and working for main contractors, and also building his own property portfolio over the last few years. So, Richard, thanks for joining us.
Brilliant. Let's get right into the content.
Now, before we tell and find out from Richard about the good, the bad, and the ugly on this budget we've just had, Richard will also be joining me in another video in the next couple of days with the co-founder of Progressive Property, Mark Homer himself, and we are going to be doing a deep dive budget review, but I can't let you wait that long. We're going to do a little bit today.
We are indeed. So let's get stuck in. What's been happening? So lots to talk about.
Good. What's good?
Well, national insurance change.
If you are an employee.
Yes, if you're an employee.
Or self-employed.
Indeed.
Yeah. So as an employer,
not so good.
Yeah, not so good. Mm. But as an employee, Jeremy Hunt, I like to call the budget the shit sandwich. Yeah. So they gave good news, shit news. And yeah. Good news.
They're trained in delivering shit sandwiches, right? Yeah. They're the government.
But the good news is always like the big thing that they hype up.
Of course,
they've hyped up the 2% saving, 2p, sorry,
2p.
2p saving in national insurance.
Yes.
So basically, I did a little bit of a calculation. 27 million people, 450 million saving. I think per person on average across the population, it'll save them about 16 quid a year. So. Congratulations for your extra 16 quid. Now, it'll be a bit more for some of you. It'll be a bit less for others. It'll be nothing for some. But on average, across the whole of the UK, you got £16 a year, sorry, from your 2p national insurance cut. Self-employed is... So 10% to 8% for employed?
For employed, yep.
Self-employed?
Self-employed. I can't remember now. There's so many numbers, so many statistics.
It's two different things for self-employed.
Completely
eight
different.
To six.
Yep.
And then something about getting rid of NIC 2.
NIC Class 2.
So what is NIC Class 2?
So there's different tiers of national insurance contributions. So they're getting rid of that whole classification completely.
Right,
that's what
the confusion of the whole system.
Yeah, it's going to make it a bit simpler for people and simplify people's accounts, which is good.
We're putting that in the good news category, even though it's more like indifferent news.
Yeah, I think with a lot of these things, it's about everybody's individuals. 9 billion people on the planet. These things affect everybody slightly differently.
Yeah.
And everybody could really have a different view on whether something might be good, might be bad, or might be indifferent. So I think from our perspective, we have to approach it from where we're at. But from somebody else, it might feel a little bit differently.
So I guess if you're watching, is the 2% national insurance cut a good news or a bad news or an indifferent news for you? Let us know in the comments what you think. We will be going deep dive further into my thoughts tomorrow in the next couple of days. Richard's thoughts and Mark Homer, co-founder of Progressive, on a deep dive budget review. But that is national insurance that has changed. VAT as well. So there's been change to VAT.
Yeah, VAT, the ceiling's now 90K, isn't it? So does that affect people? I think it affects a lot of people in a lot of different ways. Should it really have been that, or should it have been higher? You know, there's a lot of people saying it should have been a lot higher.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people in the professional services industry, though, that actually that's going to be helpful to.
Okay.
So again, I think it depends on what you do as a business and whether you're supplying products or services or a big ticket items.
So self-employed business owners more than employees.
Yeah.
So the national insurance cut for employees, the and self-employed, but the increased VAT registered level for companies and self-employed. So what is it basically? So if you've got a company and you're turning over up till before the budget, if your turnover was 85 grand, you didn't have to register for VAT. Now they've increased that threshold to 90 grand. So if your turnover is 90 grand or more, you have to register for VAT, which basically means that you become a glorified tax collector for the government, which is pretty much what it is.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is. But there's a lot of people out there that are doing, like there's a lot of people that are doing deal sourcing that sort of are around that kind of level. So I think for a lot of those people, that it's quite significant.
Yeah. But for a lot of people, the way I look at it is their costs. So the cost of their wages have gone up, so they've put the cost of their products up. So they're charging more for their products, yep, which has automatically pushed them into the VAT threshold.
Exactly.
And if inflation was like 10 to 14%, VAT has gone up from 85 to 90, yeah, which is about 3%.
Exactly. 3.5%. It should have been, that's what I said a minute, it, yeah, should have been, it should have actually been much higher.
Yeah. So really, it's actually, is it an increase in inflation? An increase in VAT threshold, or is it another hidden tax grab where, yeah, actually it's a decrease in the VAT level?
It is really.
In true customer.
In real terms, yeah, mm, absolutely.
So, what other ones? We've had the capital gains tax drop from 28, yep, to 24%.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
I'm pleased.
Why are you pleased?
Well, I'm pleased because it means we're going to pay less tax.
Yeah, so you are selling properties?
We've got stuff that we're selling right now.
So yeah,
we want to liquidate the money so that we can actually put it into other stuff. Because, right, you know, money's great, but money works when it's moving and it's doing, yeah, stuff. If it's static and it's tied up in something, for me personally, that's not so great. I'd rather be putting that into another commercial deal.
So basically, you're going to save an extra £4,000 in every 100 grand profit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
On selling property. Yep. And the non-domicile abolishment. Now, a lot of people don't even know what non-domiciled means. Does that affect you?
It doesn't personally affect me. As in personally, we work with lots of different clients. Some of them are non-dom. We've got clients who are working with investors who, yeah, are non-dom. So it potentially, in wider ripples, yes, it yeah, will do, but directly, not so much.
For anybody who's listening and you're wondering what non-dom means, basically, if anybody whose name is not Dominic. No, I'm kidding. Right, so non-domiciled means if you live abroad, if your country of residence... there's two parts to this, is abroad. So your country of residence is abroad, but you earn money in the UK. So you've got businesses in the UK making money in the UK. Then you can declare as a non-domiciled person. So you're domiciled in another country. You live in another country, basically. So then you don't need to pay UK tax on that money. Or if you do live in the UK, but you've not lived here for more than 15 years, you can elect to be non-domiciled. I'll give you an example of maybe a high-profile one. Rishi Sunak's wife. So Rishi Sunak's wife, now since he's become Prime Minister, he has decided that she will change her non-domiciled status and be domiciled in the UK, and she'll pay UK tax, mainly after it got found out that she wasn't
just
paying
a long
UK.
And short.
Yeah, just that, you know, she was kind of, oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't realise my wife was avoiding tax on her billions by being non-domiciled. Now I am the Prime Minister, I better make sure that she pays UK tax, so I'll remove the non-domicile status, but only because we got called out by the media, not because I really want to do that. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit more about non-domicile stuff in the deep dive with Mark, yeah, Comer as well, because I'm
indeed
sure Mark's
definitely
gonna
have some thoughts on that thing.
Yeah, Mark Comer's definitely going to have thoughts on that. So loads of other stuff has happened. What other ones have
happened? So there's a new ISA, 5K. That's been introduced.
So, is happy about that? Not bothered about
that?
Yeah,
you know, I'm pretty indifferent, to be honest. I've got to be honest. There's a lot of these things that, unless they directly impact on you, I think they're going to be pretty indifferent for a lot of people.
So, a lot of people see ISA, and you may be watching this, and the government sell ISA as a great thing for you to avoid tax. Tax-free. They almost sell it as tax-free income. But interestingly, not really, because you get money in your job, you pay tax, you get your money after you've paid tax. And let's say you're on 50 grand a year salary. Don't do the maths on this, just an example, but you got a 50 grand a year salary, an example, you paid 20 grand tax and you took home 30 grand. It won't be exactly that, but everyone's different, but you've got a 50 grand salary, you take home 30 grand after paying your 20 grand tax. So you got 30 grand that you take home, you got to live, pay your mortgage, buy food, etc. And you can take 5 grand of that post-tax money, money you've already paid tax on, and you can put into an ISA. And any interest, any profit on that money is not taxed. But the actual 5 grand itself that you put in is already being taxed. That's money you received after tax. And the government and the media and everybody sells this ISA to the middle classes and the less financially savvy as the main way to become wealthy. Your ISA, tax-free money. Well, I kind of think it's taxed money that's going into an ISA. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I'm saying it's an indifferent thing, and it's not as great as you might have thought it was, or as great as the government may sell it. Because it's true, most people don't think about it.
They don't think about it. They don't realise, they don't appreciate it. They've already paid tax on that money. It's crazy, right?
It's taxed money. But,
yeah.
So, what about the 99% mortgages that they were going to announce that never happened?
I'm not a fan, I've got to be honest. Getting a property with 1% in it, I just think it's just...
It's a recipe for the disaster.
It's crazy.
It's like going back
way too risky.
And the 125% mortgages repossessions.
Yeah, Northern Rock days, yeah. That's not a good plan.
So right. Here's what the government actually do. They announce these things like 99% mortgages. They release it to the media to see what the reaction of the general public is. And if the reaction is good, then they'll introduce it as part of their budget. And if the reaction is bad, they'll go, oh, that one didn't go down well. Let's pretend that that never happened and push it under the carpet.
Mm. It's a bit like a soft market test, isn't it? They're just seeing what happens. What are the papers going to say about it? What are the public going to... Are they going to revolt or they're going to be over the moon? Mm. And then they'll decide. And it's like a lot of these things. They talk about all sorts of stuff that never happens. I mean, like PD, you know, let's talk about the stuff that we're not so happy about with this
permitted
budget. Permitted development rights, you know?
So what were they going to do that they didn't do?
Well, they've touted and made a lot of noise about the fact that they were going to bring in permitted development rights, so PDR rights, that you could take individual houses and convert them into two flats. And very conveniently, seemingly, this seems to have just vaporised overnight because there's been no further mention of it.
So literally, it was mentioned in one statement and then in the autumn statement.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. And then by the time the budget comes round, and the autumn statement really is just a budget that they can't call a budget because they have a budget in March, so they call it the autumn statement, which is basically a budget.
Yep.
So that they size announced of it. That they were going to look at this in the autumn statement.
Indeed.
And then... Never looked at.
They've got a bit amnesia, I think. Amnesia crept in.
They Joe Biden'd it.
Yeah, exactly. Joe Biden'd it. Yeah, I like that. But that's not the only thing that we're not so happy about, is it?
You know, what else is bad?
Multiple dwellings relief has just disappeared.
So for anyone who's listening in, they're maybe new to property and they've no idea what multiple dwellings relief is, what is it?
So this is if you're buying more than one property, but... Less than, I think it's six, because then there's commercial relief.
Small portfolio
transactions, which there are loads of happening right now, disappeared overnight.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people won't realise what you've just said either. So most people will hear the catchphrase of multiple dwellings relief and think that that means, basically, if you buy a portfolio, let's say you bought a portfolio of a bunch of properties, rather than having to pay, if it was a £2 million purchase, rather than your solicitor, and solicitors might get this wrong, by the way.
Oh, they do all the time.
Yeah. They would say, oh, it's a £2 million purchase. Stamp duty on £2 million quid is X. But actually, what you can do is you can take each property individually and you would pay the individual stamp duty on each one. And if you put the properties through the stamp duty calculator at, say, 180 grand, 200 grand, 220 grand, 350 grand, and individual stamp duties on each one, the stamp duty added up individually will often be less than the overall stamp duty that you would have paid if you paid it on the whole 2 million as one stamp duty transaction. Because stamp duty is 3% for investors up to 250, then it goes up 5%, 8%, 12%, 15%, etc., different numbers. So individually getting them at the 3% levels can significantly save you a lot of money compared to the 2 million odd quid level, especially if you've got a 40 grand purchase where there's under 40 grand, there's no stamp duty, but add it into a mix, there is.
Exactly.
But a lot of people will believe that with the removal of this multiple dwellings relief, that it means it's gone. Hmm. But you could buy a portfolio in a limited company and pay a 0.5% stamp duty.
Exactly.
Or something interesting, the commercial stamp duty.
Yeah, for
so
bigger stuff.
Just re-elaborate a little bit for a moment on buying six or more properties is not actually multiple dwellings relief.
I would love to. But we've got a session planned where we're going to go really deep into tomorrow.
With Mark Homer.
So, do you know what? Let's leave that and have that as a freeway conversation where we can really, really sort of deep dive into that. Because we need to really sort of, I think there's this big ugly news, which has been purported to be ugly, around the furnished holiday let market.
Before we talk about that, Mark Homer... does the co-founder of Progressive does big developments. He buys portfolios. Rich is doing big commercial conversions. I bought a company where we paid stamp duty in the company. There is loads of ways around multiple dwellings relief. So make sure you're back for the deep dive budget review with myself, Richard Stone and Mark Homer. So like, subscribe, hit that notification bell so you do not miss it.
Anyway,
it's going to be on your screens in the next 48 to 72 hours. Do not miss it.
The ugly. It's like all of these things though, right? The key to all of this stuff is understanding what you can and can't do. And the way to do that is for education. So the ugly. So furnished holiday lets. Massive hot topic. It's lit up social media. They're doing away with being able to recover interest costs on mortgages on furnished holiday let properties.
So basically, furnished holiday let is serviced accommodation to a point, or known as serviced accommodation. Yeah. So what would happen in 2016? The government introduced Section 24 tax. When they introduced Section 24 tax, what that was if you own a property in your personal name and you have a mortgage on it, pre-2016, that mortgage was a tax-deductible expense. Since 2016, even though you've got a mortgage on the property, that mortgage is now taxable. So you got it. It's just no tax relief on that mortgage. So what many landlords did was they then took those properties and they ran them as serviced accommodation under furnished holiday lets, which allowed them to move that income and costing to a different part of their self-assessment. That then meant that under furnished holiday let, they could offset the cost of the mortgage, offset various different costs. Now, in our review with Mark Homer, in the next sort of 72 hours, keep an eye out for it, we're going to go deep dive into the challenges, the obstacles on all things furnished holiday let and what has happened, because this is going to mean for a lot of landlords, it is going to take them from profit making to loss making overnight. This is also going to bring big, big, big opportunities for those who understand how to get around it, just like how to get around the multiple dwellings relief. So are you impacted? If you are, you do not want to miss, in the next 72 hours, the deep dive budget review, where we will be looking into the good, the bad, and the ugly, and the indifference of many of the stuff in the budget, because you can be one type of person or another type of person. Those that allow the world to happen to you and let the budget affect you are those that create your own world and take the opportunity from the budget. There will always be opportunity out there, and I'm seeing some real big opportunities on the back of this budget, and I'm really excited about it. What's your thoughts, Richard?
Two thoughts. I think the key to all of this is understanding and education. So definitely like, subscribe, make sure you're here for the next video. And the other thing is we need to run, because we need to work out which one of the three of us is the good, the bad, and the ugly. So for now, let's wrap that up, I think.
See you in 72 hours with Mark Homer, co-founder of Progressive, Richard Stone, and myself, Kevin McDonald. You've been listening to a quick fire budget review. See you back here in 72 hours for the deep dive.
See you soon. Then.